This is a rather different kind of talk. We're really going to be talking about the game of life, the real game. But we also think, particularly from the viewpoint we're about to present it, you might as well consider it a game because way too many people play it for keeps. And while there's certain things that you can't back out of in life, if you know where you're going, you can avoid making bad mistakes. And so I'm going to talk to you about a different way of looking at how to approach the decisions of life that has some kinship to what people used to call religion. In fact, some people still call it religion. But I think you'll see that what we're talking about is very different. I'll give you a punchline here. If somewhere in this you lose track of what you think we're talking about, I'll just give you a bottom line to this. We are declaring a new kind of holy communion, a new kind of spiritual experience that could be the basis of a new and real religion, or many new and real religions, that would basically be able to embrace the erotic as a tool for personal spiritual development, and would provide everyone with basically the tools for inventing their own approach to this stuff, rather than being tied down by a bunch of doctrinal declarations that date from any time from last week to 4,000 years ago. I say it's do-it-yourself because although this is not going to sound like a discussion of technology, what we are proposing is grounded in technologies that have been explored over many hundreds and thousands of years, but have simply never made it into the light of day for a host of reasons. We think what we're suggesting to you is something that works for everybody, if they will just try it. It doesn't place high demands on it, and it's a way to play the game of life that will really work well in what we refer to as the New Age. And we are New Agers in that sense, and we think that it's time for everyone to wake up to a different way of doing business in the world. Our basic idea is love is God. You've heard many people say, I'm sure, God is love. Well, we turn that around and we say, I mean, when I grew up, I was told God is love, but love is not God. And I finally realized that's wrong. Love is God. Love is a greater thing than any human concept of God that has ever been present on this planet. So we talk about love as the supreme force in the universe. And basically, once you accept that, then you have what is your relationship to this supreme force. And as I put it coarsely in the synopsis of this talk, we fuck God, and God fucks us. We develop a personal, do-it-yourself, erotic connection with whatever appears in our minds and presents it in our minds as the influence of something greater than ourselves, our superconsciousness, or something else. Sex games, then, are a tool for introducing these concepts and for becoming familiar with them, for playing with them, for experiencing them. And we maintain, once you start down this path, you will find your ability to choose and make decisions greatly enhanced by the experience. We play sex games with love. Love is our partner in playing the game. And when I say love, I mean what I said before, God. Love is a sacred element of everything we do. We're not talking about symbols and metaphors. It's not, oh, that was as if I was fucking God. No. That is, I have a concept in my mind of what the divine presence would be like. I mean, human religion has spent an eternity nearly looking for something worthy of worship. They've worshipped rocks, they've worshipped mountains, they've worshipped people. They worship abstract ideas that no one could define clearly or demonstrate any basis for the existence of. We say, if you will worship love, you'll discover that it's a very real thing that interacts with you and comes right back, whether you view it personally or not. And there is psychosexual technology that has been developed in secret across centuries. It has been proven, suppressed, forgotten, reborn, reinvented. For hundreds of years, different groups have come forward and tried to express some of these ideas. But they've always gotten thoroughly beaten down about it. And in particular, that even though they might have followers who are going to carry their traditions forward, the followers have found so much social friction in the past over having anything that blends sexuality and religion that they just take it out eventually. And you get, for instance, the current Rosicrucian churches worldwide, which, although the whole thing was founded on an exteriorization of sex as a religious function, nobody understands it anymore. It's gone. It's been taken out of the commentaries. It's been rewritten to death. This idea that love and the worship of love is a sacred act is very interesting because, on the one hand, it invites you, if you want to start a religion, which we're not specifically advocating any specific religion, but if you want to invent one, you can have sacred elements, sacred instruments. The sacred, well, it wouldn't be a microphone, the sacred dildo that brings a deeper understanding of love. You can invent anything you wish around the basic framework, but you don't have to invent anything because what we really are saying is we have a communion in place which anyone can experience by just remembering what they're doing when they have sex or when they have erotic experience, by basically remembering that they are entering into a communion relationship with something that's bigger than their meat body. It's super consciousness. Maybe you think of it as an exterior deity. We could talk a lot about that, but the point.
Connectedness.
Connectedness, right. But one interesting sideline of this is that by making this a real religion, we achieve legal acceptance and protection, at least nominally in the United States, for anything related to this that goes in here, which in our view means pretty much everything that is ethical. And our view of ethics in this case goes right back to the declaration of love as the ultimate thing in the universe and the commitment of the individual to service the needs of love. We think people have misunderstood the idea of sacred sexuality, even though in ancient human history, in archaeology, we see lots of examples of stuff, making models and idols out of models of sexual organs and stuff like this, or deities with unusual sexual endowments and proclivities, or entire communities of dancing deities, if you go to Angkor Wat, that are all having a great deal of fun. But we don't have that in the West, really. What we have has all been suppressed in secret and has been treated as kind of a smarmy subject. It just lies outside the domains of all the concerns about restriction of pleasure and restriction of sexual enjoyment that seem to come to us as part of the baggage of monotheism. But in fact, there's nothing in monotheism that suggests that we should be opposed to sex or sexuality or eroticism. There's nothing in monotheism that would suggest that that theoretical one God is not the source of love that is the thing we engage in erotic experience and orgasm. and we consider the viewpoint, the theology, the dogma of world religions to be basically irrelevant to what we're presenting. We are much more concerned about individual freedom from superstition to for everybody to learn how to be an effective person who satisfies the desires of love by understanding the true way to act, to do good to other people, and bring balance and harmony into the universe. And that's what we think our individual tasks are. And if we will just do it, little by little, we will develop our own inner personalities, our own personal maturity, our own ability to relate to other people beyond our starting point, and we will become more effective people in community and society. We think that incorporating this into the universe of things that are generally understood by the community of people, if you will, the secular faith or belief that people have, getting this into the community will actually be equivalent to creating a new subspecies of humanity. I call them Homo sapiens eroticus, we who have sex with God. It's not that we are biologically different, it's that we have intellectually matured our understanding of our human condition and what we are, to the point that we could consider engaging these other higher powers and influences. And so that's really a distinction, but even more important is that this leads us into what I call paths of destiny, or following the force of destiny, because when you engage erotic and spiritually simultaneously, there is the release of orgasmic energy is a burst of love that goes into the human mind and is effective for shaping what you are and what you would be, and becomes the basis for an initial progression. And every time this idea has come up in conventional religion, it's been stomped out, because the idea that you can do it yourself, and do it yourself very easily by just what you do in your mind, your soul, when you jerk off or when you have sex, that can be an important step in your personal development, has been the single idea most hated by every human religion throughout history, and has been viciously suppressed at all times, because it undermines the authority of the middlemen. And of course, we have no use for middlemen in religion. You may think we're middlemen by being here and spouting this crap, but in fact, we don't want to be any middleman between someone and God. We just want people to understand that you're free to invent it and live the way you want, and you can be helped to do that by incorporating deep personal understanding of the erotic into your life. We have a paper in the folder that Allison handed out, there are two urls at the end of the inside that reference this online. There are also printed copies in back, if you would care to see a printed copy of it. It basically explains more or less our entire vision, looking at it from, it explains our entire vision looking at it from what we think is happening in the world today, what we think the history of eroticism in spirituality has to offer, which is really a very small, very thin idea, but a very important one, and then projecting what we think this means in the future. We really think that this notion that the physical erotic is the foundation for developing our experience of love is critical. From the time we're children, our earliest experience of pleasure there's a tendency to suppress it by parents, society, and so forth. But once we discover it, it leads to an eruption of joy that is a universal gift to humanity. And if we respond to these experiences of joy and goodness by returning goodness to others, by making a community of love and doing good to others, we move very far towards creating a much better and more perfect society. And this whole program depends on undermining the idea that is so common in certain religions today that you have to be obedient to a bunch of laws made up by people years ago who didn't know what they were talking about. We envision an incredibly beautiful society where from the very beginning everyone is encouraged to express their individuality. Would you like to jump in on this, Allison? Just doing good, huh? I thought I was going to hear more from you.
Well, and maybe I'll ask you a question. Or maybe I'll make it as a statement. We're not really talking about a religion. We call it a trans religion, a religion of the future that is inclusive of everybody, including the atheist, including the asexual. Because when we talk about the erotic, really we're lumping together not just orgasm, but the whole notion of pleasure, pleasure in play, pleasure in sex, pleasure in work, pleasure in relationship, and the material basis for that is happiness. To experience more happiness, to get in the flow of this real power of love, and worship nothing but that power, and getting that power to flow in you and through you. In, you know, whether you're designing a video game or, you know, taking care of a loved one, we found in our combined aged experience over many, many decades that there is an ecology of living. You know, it's been said in ballads, you know, you give love and you get love. And we're just sort of taking that a step further and saying when you give love, you become love and you become more connected in this extant turbine that's operating in a technology that we've yet to uncover the specifics of. But that, to us, is the only real thing going on here, is the exchange of love, and the more pointed and expressive we get there, and recognizing that as human beings, we're given the hardware to experience this power. It couldn't be more prominent in our existence. You know, perhaps the genitals could be up here rather than down there, but I can't imagine anything being more prominent. And there's a reason for that. It's to plug into power and to become more capable and more effective. So that's really all we're talking about, is taking us to that next level. And not just be an agent of love, but be the personification of love to everyone you meet.
One question that would naturally come up in this is, well, what do you actually do? I mean, aside from having sex or jerking off or something like that, what does it mean to worship? And I think that's a very key concept, because people have a lot of ideas of what worship means, and it's gotten a pretty bad rap from most churches. People can come to think that worship is just sitting in a pew with a bunch of other people and listening to someone drone on, just like you're doing now. Hopefully not, though. To us, worship is an inner state in which you actually desire to become more like whatever it is you're worshiping. And it works. If you worship rocks, you become stupid. But if you worship people, you will become more socially attached to people. If you worship an ideal transcendent experience like love, what you're saying really is, in my inner heart, my inner belief, I want to substitute the reality of love for my misconceptions of it. I want to gradually turn loose of what I don't understand and learn more about it. And you can say, well, I want to do that all the time. And I will say, yes. But if you really and sincerely want to do that at the point of orgasm, it is much more effective psychologically and internally for reshaping the way your mind thinks about things. And this is not news. I mean, the inventors of Telema, one of the occult religions of the early 20th century, knew this quite well, although they were afraid to talk about it because they didn't believe that people who had drawn to them because they thought they were going to learn psychokinesis or something, and nothing could have been further from the truth, or telepathy or something. The key has always been, the revelation has always been the ability to uplift the inner spirit. And that's been known for a long time and accepted, but people don't talk about it. They can't imagine it's true, really. We think the time has come for society to wake up and take a hold of this for real. And of course, the usual complaint about that is, well, don't you have any ethical guidelines or frameworks? I mean, how are you going to prevent horrible abuse and other things? And to that we answer, that's why love is central. If this is for some other purpose, it may or may not lead you where you want to go. It may be personally destructive. So there are implicit rules of this game of life. And the primacy of love and the supporting functions of truth, goodness, and beauty. You live truth, you do good to others, and you create beauty in the world. As long as this is your focus, you will not abuse other people and you will not abuse this great privilege.
Say a word about truth, because that's, you know, long been the debate of many different conversations. How can you quantify truth? How can you quantify good and bad? We define truth as persistence, that which is persistent in the mind. You know, there's a saying in journalism, oh, that story has legs. That means it can go into the future and be accurate. And it's the same with truth in our minds. I could ask all 50 of you or 50 people standing out on that street, and I don't know what words we would use, but everybody would acknowledge in themselves what I call the bullshit meter that goes off inside of you when you're not hearing truth or not seeing truth or seeing imbalance or seeing something that's ugly. That is inside of you, that combination of heart and mind that declares what's truth. And we need to rely on that more than objective discussions of what's truth. I mean, you can read and see so many different things. That which sticks with you as real, that's the true part. And the same thing with goodness. Everybody knows the feeling of someone being good to them, or when we are good to another person. That's so important in human progress, to rely on that measure of doing good to another person. And that's really like the currency of love, is that goodness going back and forth. And the absence of that is also the absence of love. Beauty also, you know, is determined internally. We all know it when we see it. We have different definitions of it for ourselves. Somebody might find something beautiful that I find abhorrent. But what's important is that we accept and validate our own perceptions of beauty. I think so much of society forces you into a mindset where these things are determined externally, and your internal resources are diminished as being like average, or everybody's just alike, or everybody's just different. It's what people are telling you from the outside, rather than relying again on these real resources that you have at your disposal, and maybe don't give credit to often enough. I'd say this credit crowd probably more than other people.
Of course, one of the questions that naturally come up was, where is this leading? Why would you bother? I mean, you're saying, well, I'll grow into being a better person. Well, I think that from this practice comes much deeper understanding of your relationship to the world. And this is simply saying, anybody who pursues this sincerely will get here. Not necessarily instantaneously, but they're on the path to understanding. And what they understand is that they have a destiny which is really joyful immortality. As you become more accustomed to sharing love with yourself and others in a really elevated state of consciousness, you could come to understand the potential of the path of this leads to an immortal existence, not physical, but some kind of immortal self-conscious existence. You become aware of your permanence in the universe, and that there's nothing to be afraid of, that no matter what fucks with you here, right now, as you're a bio-host living here in material reality, there is a permanent existence after this that cannot be defined. It's not floating on a cloud or something like that, but a continuity of consciousness, further opportunity to develop. And if you wish to go on existing, the power to go on existing as a person. And once you become aware of this, it will transform your entire perspective on what your current existence is like. It will orchestrate the random harmonies of life, because you will see how different factors of destiny are coming in to influence your path, to influence the people you work with, you experience, and to bring together a community of effective spiritual power. This raw power, when unleashed, will motivate the constructive and creative change that's needed to transform society. And it's, to us, it's the new communion of love that can truly change and save the world. To sum up, we feel we have finally gained understanding of what actual thread of effectiveness there is, how it works, and how you use it. And it's really a pretty good idea, we think. We've based it in an enhanced myth-free communion that is pro-sexual, and we let you know that we endorse it, we support it, and we hope others will do the same. We have a tremendous amount of work ahead of us to find better ways to explain these ideas, better ways to persuade people of their value, and better ways really to just get people to try it, to seduce people into it. Because in our own experience, it doesn't take much to get started on this, and the rewards are very quickly received. And that's...
Yeah, I think I used the word persistent instead of consistent when I was talking about truth, and I apologize for that. I just want to make sure we don't forget to put this in context. You know, what does changing the world really mean? This ability to deal with, you know, a rational idea of what it is to be a human and what extraterrestrial gifts we're empowered with? What are our superpowers? Where it leads, I believe, is in a greater understanding of one's own origins, one's history, and where you're going. And that's because you get a farther and farther advanced view of what's coming next. You're able, in a sense, to live in your own future. I can imagine right now that world out there. Every child that's born is born with this freedom to not be defined by a group, you know, to just become what it was meant to be or could be to fulfill its potential. But also to visualize systems that are part of the future. I think we all know that we're heading away from coercive systems that we currently suffer under and gradually replace them with, you know, at least benign, but very much so supportive, voluntary associations where people are allowed to live and let live. I always use the example of reproductive rights in this respect, that we're gradually moving away from the idea that there needs to be a coercive system over a woman's body and her ability to reproduce life. There's vaginal probes, you know, in control of that woman's life. And but we're gradually coming over to the voluntary association, where the woman voluntarily associates with her doctor or her family, whoever she wants to obtain, you know, to chart her own destiny. So in moving in that direction, that better world, if you can operate in a rational system where you just have a few guideposts like love, truth, beauty, and goodness to guide you, you will get a more enlarged view of that future and be able to put it to work today, whether it's through your advocacy, your activism, your writing, your creativity, but to bring that perfect future closer today.
So I think we've reached the Q&A point.
Thanks again, folks, that you came up. You sent us an email that we would like to support you and our Symphonica. It was really nice that you did that. It's good that people like you support us, because then we don't have to take the money from Adobe or something.
Yeah, we have a website. It's devoted to sexual freedom. It deals with everything from net neutrality to some of these higher consciousness issues, equality rights, and things like that. We brought a bunch of swag.
Yeah, we're as bad as Adobe.
Yeah. Well, we thought you might want one of our T-shirts that has the Statue of Freedom that's atop the U.S. Capitol, which was modeled after a two-spirit, a Native American two-spirit, a transgender person. And our slogan is sexual freedom, you're born with it. And you can see we're all about what you're born with, taking it and making a better world because of it. So pick up a T-shirt. We have other things there, and you can sign our guest book. We don't send a lot of email, but we'd love to stay in touch with you and hear from you.